Welcome back to Tattoos, Code, and Data Flows. Have a very exciting guest today, Chris Hughes. You may know him from a lot of his internet posts on LinkedIn. He has some great content that he puts out there on a basis. He's a military background and is very passionate about cybersecurity. Welcome to the show, Chris.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Chris, welcome to the podcast today. Really appreciate you taking the time out of your schedule to join us and have a quick conversation.
Yeah, definitely. I'm excited to be here and chat with you.
All right. And, you know, you're very well followed on LinkedIn with your posts and you have a, you know, post a lot of great things out there. For people that don't know you, why don't you give a little background on yourself and let the audience get to know Chris?
Yeah, definitely. Chris Hughes. I have about, you know, a little bit over 15 years in cybersecurity. Started off at active duty in the military and the Air Force. Been a federal employee with the Navy as well as FedRAMP, if people familiar with FedRAMP. Mm-hmm. And then some various industry roles in the commercial and the government side as well. And now a co-founder and CISO at a company named Acquia.
Awesome. Well, that's a pretty good background and appreciate your service. My brother was also active duty in the Army. He was actually an Apache pilot. So definitely awesome. Appreciate your service.
Thank you.
Why don't we roll into our first section, which is thinking out loud.
Thinking out loud, maybe.
So, Chris, when you get up in the morning, what's top of mind for you as your current professional role? I mean, what are you thinking about? What are the challenges you're facing? What really gets you going in the morning?
Yeah, I'd say lately some of the key things I think about is, you know, DevSecOps in terms of where we are as an industry and like where we're headed. And then obviously software supply chain security has been a real hot topic lately in the public sector, in particular where I work, you know, looking at the cybersecurity executive order. And, you know, we recently had the Linux Foundation OpenSSF published the open source software security mobilization plan. So I'm usually thinking about those kind of things when it comes to professional kind of context.
Now, how do you go about that with the mandates and everything like that? Is it a tooling? Is it a consultative effort? What are the ways you kind of address those activities?
Yeah, you know, like anything else in technology or cyber, it's like people process technology in that order, I think, and we always dick that up for one reason or another. You know, I think it's a combination of both, you know, having technology that can help give better insight into the software we're producing and consuming as an industry, and then having, you know, organizational practices in place to look for those things and make use of them to drive down organizational risk.
Yeah, and that probably goes hand in hand with the DevOps type of conversation, you know, moving faster, moving more fluid in terms of releases. It's always hard to keep up with the processes that we're actually inventing these days.
Yeah. There's always, honestly, I just had to talk with someone else. You know, it's not usually a technology issue. It's like organizational policies or processes and policies just haven't kept pace with like where technology is going and trying to, you know, how we're moving as a business. And that's usually an impediment.
Oh, awesome. All right. So that's the first section. And those are great information. But now you get a chance to really express your opinion, if you will. So we'll move into our rant session.
I got a lot of problems with you people. Now you're going to hear about it.
What ticks you off these days?
You know, I would think, honestly, you know, whether it's DevSecOps or Zero Trust or, you know, kind of whatever the latest buzzword or initiative is like, you know, we always think that something that can be bought. You know, we're just going to buy DevSecOps. We're going to buy Agile. We're going to buy Zero Trust. And vendors, you know, play into that a lot. And leaders who are, you know, kind of stretched too thin in many cases and just trying to meet, you know, where organizational mandates or industry mandates, whatever the case is, you know, they kind of fall victim to that marketing too. So I wish we can get away from the idea that we can just buy security or buy, you know, X, whatever it is, like it often isn't the case.
Yeah, I always like to say it's like people are like, oh, well, you know, I need a DevOps solution. I'm like, what is that? That could be one of 100 different things.
Yes.
And people say, we are a DevOps vendor. I don't know what that means. Please provide clarity on what a DevOps vendor is, because you could be in many different facets of the DevOps ecosystem.
Yeah. I mean, that applies to like, you know, vendors and tools as well as like roles. You know, you'll see like on the government side, they have labor categories, for example, and they'll have a labor category for a DevSecOps engineer. And it's like, well, what is that exactly? You know, what tools are they used to using? What practices and processes, you know, are they familiar with? Like it means so many things to different people. So it's really hard to define with just like a title.
Yeah, we tend to latch on to terms and phrases and beat them to death because people feel comfortable and smart when they use them.
Yeah.
Not that that's a bad term, but I just feel that a lot of times people latch on to stuff.
Yeah.
Awesome. So let's flip the tables and go 180 degrees on this. This is the Nirvana World section. If you had a magic wand, what would you fix in DevOps or supply chain or cybersecurity as a whole? What would be the one thing or multiple things for that matter that you'd like to see fixed?
That's a good one. That's a tough one. You know, what would it look like in a utopia? I would say that security is like a key consideration, you know, from the outset of a system or software development lifecycle. It's not something kind of, you know, as they say, bolted on at the end. It's something to consider from the beginning. And then, you know, honestly, the workforce challenge, you look at these efforts, whether it's, like I said, Zero Trust, DevSecOps, Agile, whatever, you know, cloud is a big one. Organizations are really quick to move to these things and have these goals, but they often leave the workforce behind. And that's why a lot of these initiatives fail, is we don't invest properly. Like, we buy all the tools and all the, you know, shiny things, right? But we don't invest in our people. And that drives me crazy. So I think that that's something I would fix as well.
Yeah, I totally agree. A lot of people feel they buy a bleeding edge piece of technology in a tooling space, and it's never operationalized correctly. It sits on the shelf, and you're not any more secure if you don't actually use it correctly or use it to its complete capabilities.
Yeah, I made a post like a week ago, and it really like took off as, like, I think I said, like, if you're a cybersecurity leader and you're adding security tooling faster than your team can, like, you know, operationalize it, tune it, configure it, and start to generate like value from it, you're actually creating more risk. You know, a lot of these security tools have like administrative access or elevated privileges. You know, they're part of your attack surface. And not only that, but the cognitive overload of your team. Like, you know, you're just kind of dropping, hey, I need you guys to do this. I need you to do this. And they never get time to fully implement things. And you just have, you know, this dashboard and that dashboard and like all this information coming at you, and you're not really taking any action on it. So it creates more risk, I think, in some cases.
Yeah, you're kind of obscuring the information because you just have so much of it.
Yeah, you're drowning.
Yeah. Now, where was that post? I missed that. Is that on LinkedIn, or where, if someone wanted to look it up?
Yeah, it was on LinkedIn. It was short, but you know, tons of people, you know, for whatever reason, you know, kind of clung to it and liked it. And I think it's because, you know, depending on your role, whether you're security or not, you know, in technology, we've all probably fell victim to, like, you know, hey, now we have this new thing that we need to do, and you don't really get time to implement it properly, or, you know, you just keep getting things dumped on you, and you only have so much time in a day. So I think a lot of folks can relate to that.
Awesome. Well, that's good information, and I would like to see that Nirvana world. That would be a great one. All right, we'll move into our next section, which is the speed round. He's going the distance. He's going for speed. So, Chris, these are kind of short questions to get your opinion on kind of controversial type things. Not really totally controversial, but, you know, opinionated type things. So one of the things you mentioned a couple of times, and this is one that kind of is a bugaboo for me, is that overuse of the term agile. What's your take on the term agile? Is it, when people say agile, do you think they're talking about a software development methodology or something totally different? Because I hear we're agile DevOps all the time. How do you, you know, kind of define that when you hear it in your brain?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I'm not an academic on the topic. You know, I'll probably butcher it. But like, for me, I don't think there's one way to do it. I think it just means, as an organization, as a program, as a team, you're capable of being flexible. Basically, like, you can change processes and tools and technologies to make things work for your organization, deliver value for your business or your organization. People get so caught up on the academic side of it, and, you know, what is or isn't agile, you know, that kind of thing. And I think people get so spun up on that they just waste time they could have actually executed and done something.
Gotcha. No, that's a great take on it too. Is that responsible? You know, that quick action to change. Definitely agree with that. The second one, being in cybersecurity, and this is the thing that has been the bane of my existence for going on 18 years, is everyone's very comfortable with the term bug when it comes to configuration or functional bugs. You call something a security bug, whether it's an application security bug or a cloud security bug or something with the term security in it, people freak out. What's your take on that? Do you think that they should be different categories and different processes, or a bug is a bug is a bug? You should still go down the same challenge, the same path to remediation.
That's a tricky one. I think so. I think it's both, in the sense that, like, you know, being able to deliver, you know, improved software, whether you're talking a patch for like a non-security bug or a security bug, whatever the case is, right, a fix, you need to be capable of doing that regardless of whatever kind of bug it is. And I think that's why you see like Dora metrics and stuff. If you can do software delivery, you know, at speed, you can fix bugs, security bugs faster. So that's a valid, you know, point there in that regard. But I think there is some concern that, you know, if it's a security bug, you could be compromising sensitive data or proprietary information or impacting your customers and your partners and have a regulatory impact, for example. So I think that kind of sparks fear in people's hearts, you know, when they hear security bug, as they know there may be some ramifications with it. You know, if something's not working properly and, you know, maybe something's kind of glitchy for a customer, that's one thing. But if you've, you know, exposed sensitive data or a secret, or, you know, you maybe open yourself up to regulatory complications and ramifications, that's another story.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that one of the interesting things about it is that context is lacking when you're talking security bugs. People are very familiar with a functional bug. I click a submit button on a form and something doesn't work correctly. Yeah. Okay, it's an action. My, you know, configuration files are pointed at, you know, production data or development data. And it's not, but from a security standpoint, you don't know what the ramifications are. You don't know the full context of risk because you're only looking at it through the lens of a few variables in the equation. So I think that's why it's just the context is lacking, is why people freak out about security bugs.
Yeah, I think if you were to take it like a step further and like say do some threat modeling or something and see like, you know, based on this bug, what could happen, that would give you the context. But people just often don't take the time to do those kind of things.
Yeah, I think that's based on rapid CI/CD processes. Threat modeling is a very difficult activity to do when you're releasing sometimes hundreds of times a day.
Yeah, yeah, most definitely. There's some folks, you know, have some great content out there. Robert Hurlburt and, you know, other folks, Showstack, of course, of how to do that, you know, kind of like agile DevSecOps threat modeling. But it does take a paradigm shift, you know, from the traditional approach, I think.
Awesome. So you just mentioned a couple of people. I mean, who do you respect most in the industry? I mean, you're very active on LinkedIn with posts and have a lot of followers and you follow a lot of people. You know, who would you be your kind of gold standard in terms of, you know, learning for your own professional and personal development through other people?
That's a tough one because, we have such a rich ecosystem of people that all have like unique expertise in areas of, you know, background and experiences. You know, definitely some names that come to mind right away. If you're talking like a global CISO, I like Gary Hayslip has been a great mentor and individual I follow. Also the CISO of Equifax. He puts out some great information. If you follow him, he's a great CISO. And there's other people like Jarek Beeson, you know, he's a Capital One CISO, puts out a lot of great information on leadership, empathy and things like that. You know, it just really depends what you're looking for. You know, obviously you're talking software supply chain. Dr. Alan Friedman at CISA, you know, is a thought leader in that space. So I love like having a big network on LinkedIn, not because of who follows me, but because of who I can follow and go, you know, if I need certain information in a certain area of expertise, I'm going to go listen to this person. Right. And it just, you can tap into so many great minds. I love it.
Yeah. And that's how kind of we got connected for the podcast today is you saw some of my stuff. I saw some of your stuff and we started to like a lot of them, follow the same people. So it's that I don't know, crowdsourcing or organic connection you get through a LinkedIn post is kind of it's an amazing tool.
Yeah. I mean, I can remember the days earlier in my career, you know, where you're kind of like in a cubicle and, you know, LinkedIn wasn't really a popular thing yet. You know, if you wanted to pick someone's brain, it was mostly the people in the physical building that you were in. And, you know, so just being able to jump on LinkedIn and you need a certain area of expertise on a certain topic, you can, you know, you can find damn near anyone out there that you can go talk to them. And they're usually people are willing to talk to you about topics they're passionate about. So it's amazing.
Yeah. Speaking of something I'm passionate about, and you mentioned a post you did that got like, is a basic post that got a ton of following and comments and activity. Mine was, you know, is shift left still a thing? I feel that shift left is a dated term. I put that out there on LinkedIn and I could not believe the response to that. What's your take on shift left as a concept? Everyone says shift left. What's your take with a modern, you know, DevOps CI/CD pipeline in the concept of shift left?
Yeah, I guess I'm curious your perspective too. I do think it's a thing. But I think we've went too far to where like it became the only thing. Like, you know, should we be shifting left to drive down, you know, vulnerabilities earlier in the lifecycle where it's cheaper, it's easier to fix, it doesn't cause as much disruption. You know, you're empowering developers, you know, to fix issues closest to where they've maybe created them in many cases with insecure code or whatever the case is. But at the same time, you know, you have runtime and operational security considerations too. So we've kind of shifted, you know. I've seen someone give a talk called shift everywhere or something like that.
That's the term I use all the time. It's like, you know, it's shift everywhere.
Yeah, exactly. Shift left is one thing and we should be doing it, of course, you know, like, and that's the issue I think in cybersecurity and technology and in society in general is like, we always approach things in this binary. It has to be this or this versus like it actually is a spectrum. You know what I mean? Like, you know, so it's not one thing or another. It's many things.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm going to use my board here for a second, because I always talk about it like that, you know, a line was all the way you always, you know, kind of depicted a software development lifecycle. It had a beginning, design, develop, code, test, release, production. And it always insinuated there was a beginning and an end. Then you talk about DevOps and you have this loop. And I always like this, especially when I have speaking engagements, saying, where's left on this? Where is left? It's this constantly moving thing, and things are happening at this step and this step and this step and this step and this step, and the entity you're looking at is much different.
Yeah.
So I like to say that, you know, shifting everywhere is what you need to do, because left, I think, is a great place for remediation and to find new things, but that entity is always changing as it moves through, especially when you're talking like cloud native development, where you're snapping all the pieces of the puzzle together later on in the process, further away from the hypothetical left.
Yeah. I mean, maybe you have new vulnerabilities come out that didn't exist at the time, but something went through a pipeline, or you have a runtime incident, security incident of some sort. Like, but I will say Shift Everywhere, you know, I think it's true, but it also is daunting because, you know, you can only be in so many places at so many times. We all know that, you know, we're often understaffed and just, you know, really bogged down in so many different activities. So it is an intimidating phrase too, to be honest.
Yes, it is. But again,
we're
in an intimidating business.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, it's the reality of the world we live in, honestly.
Yeah. So thank you. That was a speed round. That was a great speed round, by the way. I appreciate your kind of insight in a bunch of different areas and you know, humbling me with letting me draw on the board a little bit. So I appreciate that. Let's move into the expert witness section.
Your Honor, I move to disqualify Ms. Vito as an expert witness.
Can you answer the question?
No, it is a trick question.
So, Chris, your background, you know, seems like very much in government, public sector, DOD. How is your opinion it different than the commercial sector? I mean, I know I've worked in it myself, but coming from an expert that's living and breathing it, it's a much different beast. And a lot of startups and cybersecurity companies, we got to get into the DOD. We got to get into the civilian agencies. And they don't realize that's a long road and a it's a very effective road, but it's a complicated and lengthy road, if you will. Could I get your opinion on that?
No, that's definitely right. You know, if you're, like I say, a cloud service provider trying to get into the federal space, you know, you have to go through FedRAMP, which is a massively expensive, time-consuming process. Federal procurement cycles are notoriously long and you know, much different than the commercial space. And there are some nuances, like, you know, commercial sector tends to move faster. It has less regulation in many cases and less, red tape and bureaucracy to go through. But often because, you know, in the public sector, you have citizen services at risk, you know, whether it's Medicare and Medicaid, things like that, or you have Department of Defense and weapons systems. You know, but at the same time, you know, trying to balance that is always difficult because, you know, if we fail to innovate, you know, if we fail to modernize and innovate and digitally transform the way the government, the Department of Defense and such operates, you know, we kind of fail to deliver to, you know, the warfighter, the citizen, the stakeholders of the nation. So it's definitely a delicate balance, in my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I've become very versed in, you know, terms like ATO and, you know, the integrators, how it's like you have to deal with the integrator and the organization.
Yeah.
It's there's many more steps along the path than there is with a commercial entity.
Yeah, absolutely. The ATO is one we could have an entire show on. It's you know, it's a painful process, but, you know, it's well intended. It's just poorly implemented often.
Sorry, I throw out an acronym to the audience that doesn't know. Chris, maybe define ATO.
Yeah, so people know. In government speak, you know, they use what's called the Risk Management Framework from NIST, National Institute of Standards and Technologies, and ATO is an authority to operate. So before a system, you know, can go to a production environment, use production data, that kind of thing, it has to have an authority to operate. And, you know, think of it in the context of, you know, you have an authorizing official, an official that's in a position to, like, you know, accept risk on the behalf of the organization and grant, you know, let you go to production. They have to essentially, like, you know, take a look at the system and the residual risk of the system before you can get that sign off. In the commercial space, you know, there's obviously other processes, but ultimately it's a lot easier to get to production in commercial space many times than it is in the federal government because you have hundreds of security controls, maybe thousands of sub controls, stacks of documents you got to put together. It can be a painful process.
No. Well, thank you for sharing that. Hopefully that was educational to everybody because, yeah, it is a process and something I've definitely experienced, which can be painful. So awesome. Well, let's move into the social aspect of the podcast, which is the tattoo question.
Now he's getting a tattoo. Yeah, he's getting ink done. He asked for a 13, but they drew a 31.
So, Chris, you know, in your activity, there's a lot of talk about people being able to express themselves, especially in cybersecurity. You being more on the government side, what's your take with people with, you know, expressing themselves through tattoos or alternate, I don't know, kind of appearances, so on and so forth? You go to Black Hat, you go to DEF CON, you see it. A lot of people are talking about how this is actually, you know, being widely accepted all the way up to the C-level executives of a company. What's your take on tattoos in the professional space these days?
Yeah, it's interesting because I have a mix of, you know, military background where there's a lot of tattoos in the military. You know, I have several myself. And, but at the same time, I know that, you know, traditionally, like, you know, at the higher levels of organizations, you know, obviously it was, you know, got to wear a long sleeve, got to cover this up or cover that up. But I think we are seeing a shift to where, you know, people are more focused on outcomes, like, you know, delivering for your organization than they are, like, necessarily appearances. At least that's how I feel. And I think others are starting to move in that direction. Same thing, you know, kind of from the remote work paradigm. It's not where you sit, it's what you do. Same thing, it's not like what you how you dress or what you wear, what tattoos you have. It's what you accomplish for the organization and the mission. So I think we are seeing a paradigm shift there, and even standards in the military change to an extent. So I think it's a good thing personally. Like, I don't really care what tattoos someone has, as long as they're, you know, they're doing good work and providing valuable insight. You know, that's all that really matters.
Yeah, and a social experiment. RSA is next week for people that are going, that are listening to this. I know I'm dating the podcast, but I just want to throw this. You know, take a look at the people, probably the people you have the most interesting conversation with. I'm just generalizing here. Maybe a little bit more edgy than the ones in the suit. I just think that the RSA is the black hats. When you have the conversation with more of the unique person, you're going to get a more unique perspective. This just something I'm throwing out there just for conversation for everybody. Cool. All right. Well, that's thank you for answering that question, and very honestly, too. That's awesome. But we're going to do our wrap-up session now.
Closing time. You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here.
So is there a organization or a charity or a sports organization that you're very passionate about that you like to kind of promote on the podcast? Because this is your soapbox to communicate.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a big, advocate for veterans organizations like Wounded Warrior, you know, Foundation, things of that nature, obviously being prior service military. I live in a very heavily dense military oriented area. So I like to support veterans organizations. I'm a veteran owned business myself, of course. And that's my kind of passion in terms of charities and things of that nature. Hobby wise, something I would like to advocate is, you know, people that don't take part in, say, martial arts like jiu-jitsu. Definitely check it out. There's a lot of technology people in jiu-jitsu community. I'm one of them, and you'll be surprised. You know, you go in, there's a lot of nerd killers on the mat, you know, that are out there. So, it's a great activity to break up the monotony of sitting at the desk, poor posture at the desk and the chair, et cetera. Like, just, get out there, get sweating, meet some cool people. Like you said, people from a lot of different backgrounds, interesting folks. So, check it out if you never have.
Do you have a ranking? Do they do rankings in jiu-jitsu? Or?
Yeah, they do. They have a belt system. Like, it goes white, blue, purple, brown, and black. I am a blue belt currently. I've been training for, 3 or 4 years, and really, really awesome. I love it.
Really? How long does it usually take to get all the way to black?
It all depends, man. I'm a working guy with like 4 kids, there's other people who are 22 years old and they train, 6 days a week. So it just really depends. Like, everyone moves at their own pace, and that's what's cool. It's like everyone's on their own journey. And, the community really respects that. So, you do your thing and you just get better than you were previously.
That's it. It's all about, self-development, I think, is probably the best way to put it.
Yep.
We can't think about hackers all day long. We got to have a little bit.
We got to have
a release.
Yeah. When someone's trying to choke you, you're not worried about the latest zero day or, whatever. Like, you're just trying to make it out of there.
Awesome. Well, hey, I really appreciate you coming on. It was a great conversation. We try not to make these too long, just to the point and open discussion. And I really enjoyed the conversation today. Hopefully you did as well.
Yeah, definitely. I'm excited to be here.
I want to thank my guest, Chris Hughes, for joining us on Tattoos, Code, and Data Flows. It was a great conversation. We covered a lot of interesting topics. Please like, subscribe, follow, and listen to the podcast on your normal podcast platform.